by the camp out?
What?
For the camp out?
Yeah, the flyers are on the table over there.
Flyers are on the table over there to my left for the camp out. Okay, I'd like to introduce our speaker tonight, James B. from San Diego. Woo! Welcome. Good to have you here. Do you need something? You get about 3 minutes left. You can go until 9 o'clock.
All right. Okay, I can do that. Whew. I might call the name James Brown. I'd like to thank my higher power, God, for another day of sobriety. Welcome the newcomer to a new way of life. Let you know you don't have to take no drinks, sneak no drugs, harm yourself or anybody else, even if your mind tell you that you want to. And I like to say, even if your mind tell you that you want to, because mind tell me a whole lot of things. But because my higher power, God, the program Alcoholics Anonymous, and you men and women that show up to these meetings on a regular basis, I've been empowered to pause and pray. I don't react or act out to situations the way I used to. Man, congratulations. Congratulations to all you that took time, man. You know, that's a precious gift of the program, to be able to see the people that came before me celebrate their accumulative one day at the times. You know, I'm from Detroit, Michigan, originally. And I grew up in a family that was a big old, loving, caring, dysfunctional family. And when I say I had, it was like our family here. I had a big family. Y'all think we got a big family here? I had a big family there too, so I'm used to being in a big family. And, you know, my mom and dad, they was kids having kids. And I had a whole, man, wow. Sometimes I don't even know how to start talking about how I grew up. You know, but I grew up in a family where alcohol and party favors was just normal. You know, the way my family drank, the way my father drank, the way my uncles drank, the way, you know, I had a grandfather, a big dad. He didn't drink like them. He was special. And I admired him. See, I admired him. That's who I wanted to be like. But I fell short because the things that my dad, my uncles, and my cousin did, they made the life they lived, they glamorized it. And I fell for the okey-doke at a young age, okay? You need to understand that. You know, I started drinking willingly, knowing what I was doing at 12 years old. I'm not talking about the little sips of the can that was given to me when I was 3, 5, 7, 8, 9. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about getting ready to go to middle school, grabbing my grandfather's CC, pouring it into my coffee so I can catch a buzz, so I can go to school and be in my own damn world and not worry about nobody around me so I can focus on getting my damn schoolwork done.
Yes, sir.
I was a straight-A student until I got into the ninth grade. Okay? Okay, I need to let you know now. I cried when I was in the eighth grade when I got my first C, and I cried, okay? That's how much I was in tune to getting an education. I was told that once I got an education, it was mine and nobody could take it away from me. The only way it could be lost is if I gave it away. So I was very, very in tune with school. But see, I told y'all that I grew up with a father, some uncles, and some cousins, and some aunties now. There wasn't no joke, okay? And the lifestyle that they lived was like, it was just something that, you know, selling drugs, running guns, selling dynamite, all that type of stuff. It was like normal. You know, that was just like, that was the hustle. See, I watched the people in my life that was my family work hard and hustle harder to provide a house, food on the table, school money, clothes and shoes. And I thought that type of lifestyle was the way that everybody lived. Even though I had friends and a few other associates that family wasn't as dysfunctional as mine, they had dysfunctional families. You know, and growing up, I was happy with wanting to be everybody but me. You see, you need to understand, it started way before I picked up a drink. You know, the uncomfortability of looking at myself, wanting to be taller, wanting to have longer hair, you know, wanting to be muscular. You know, I wasn't happy with the short, chubby kid that I was. So what I did was I created the person I wanted to be. So nobody would pick on me and bully me. I learned about guns at a very young age. I learned about a lot of types of stuff to go on with drugs at a very, very young age. I didn't get deeply involved into that stuff until later, but it was a part of me growing up. It was a part of me that I wanted so much to stay away from. See, but when I first got here, I heard about the lifestyle will kill me if the alcohol and the drugs don't. So I was addicted to a way of life before I was even in it. You know, I remember when I was 3 years old, and see, I'm a mama's boy, but I'm a daddy's little man. See, I love my mom, and I have a very infectious, loving relationship with my mom. And I had a very turbulent, I can't stand you, want to kill relationship with my dad. See, and I wanted to kill my dad. Because, see, when I was growing up, I used to watch my dad beat the shit out my mom. See, I watched my mom look like she just got out of a boxing match with a professional boxer. But see, she wasn't no pushover, though, because he would come, he would have scratches and shit all over him, and she would have a black eye, but he'd have scratches, you know, and that kind of stuff, man, it made me create a fantasy world in my mind where I could be okay with all the shit that went on around me. So as my mother and father showed that they couldn't take care of us the way we should be, we moved and stayed with our big mom and big dad. And it was a big family house, and every holiday was like the to-do thing. I mean, wow. Like, our family came from all over the town, up way up north, all over to just be all in this one house. And you would see the grown-ups in the basement, in the backyard, they playing cards and dominoes and sitting on the front porch, and we, the kids, riding up and down the streets on our bikes. See, I had a normal childhood, building go-karts and riding bikes and going to the Boys and Girls Club, all that stuff. But it was just something that just wasn't right. I just wasn't right. I just couldn't feel comfortable with me. And the alcohol, see, when I started sipping that alcohol on the way to school, it made me feel like I was okay. See, I started becoming comfortable with me, see, but I really started becoming comfortable with the person I was creating myself to be. You know, that little shy kid that cried when his dad hollered at him or looked at him a certain way. I started to create this facade that I didn't give a fuck. I figured out something in my family. If I just did what they said do, that left the gate open for them to focus on everybody else, and I could do what I wanted to do. Yeah. See, I was the little good kid that ran home with my straight-A report card, waving it in their face, but with my friends them waiting around the corner, for us to go and steal bikes and run out of stores with shit and sneak and smoke weed and all the other little devilish things we do as kids. I did all of it. I did it all. And, you know, what I want to talk about is, like, you know, I blacked out and was froze before I was 14 years old. You see, I was drinking and using drugs at that rate that my body and my mind was all messed up, and I was blacking out before I was even 14. Like, I was done early on. I love the effects produced by alcohol and other substances when I put them in my body, you see. So what happened is I kept doing that type of stuff over and over and over, and I went through middle school and high school drinking and doing all the stuff that I did and you all probably did growing up too. And if you didn't, I'm sorry you missed out, okay? Shit. You know, and you need to understand, see, all my drinking days was not bad days. All my drinking days was not troublesome days. There was some times before I crossed the invisible line that having a drink and enjoying it was okay. But somewhere along the way, I crossed the invisible line to where now I cannot take any form of alcohol for no reason at all. You need to understand that. You see, because when I kept trying to say, well, I'll just sip this before I was even an adult and I'll save the rest for tomorrow, I couldn't pull it off. So I went to high school, man, and like I said, you know, I was good. I could go and sit in the class and just be in the class and come back and take a test tomorrow and get an A. School was not an issue for me. You know, I was one of those kids. So in school, you know, I just I thought leaving my neighborhood that I'll go to the school outside my neighborhood and I'll meet some people that'll help me be a better person. But I ran into me wherever I took me. You know, even before I became an adult, I was restless, irritable, and discontented before I even realized what was going on in life. And shit, man, to turn around and be a high school fucking parent like my own parents, I felt like I was doomed. You know, it was like the vicious cycle was just repeating itself over and over and over. So, you know, here I am, 18 years old, got this young lady pregnant who's my kid's mom, and I was so in love with this young lady. I need you to understand this. I was in love with her. Like, she showed me what, like, unconditional love was about. Because, see, I wasn't a kid with the fancy this and the fancy that. I was just just a normal kid trying to be a tough guy, trying to be the fancy kid. And she just knew who I was and knew my heart. And she catered to that and she loved me. Like, you know, that love I was wanting from my mom and my dad, you know, I was getting it from her. And we created our little family. And see, I needed a way to take care of this little family. You know, so she dropped out of school so I could go to school. And then I would leave school and I would do a work study program. See, because growing up, like, I learned how to type and I learned how to file and I learned how to do a whole lot of shit that kids like me wasn't learning how to do. Because I wanted to be different. I wanted to set the bar always up here so I could be special. Because I always was seeking attention and approval. So, you know, I got this little job and the little job wasn't enough. So my cousin was like, you can come and hang out with us at this spot and you can do this or that. And I was like, well, what am I gonna be? And they just said, come on over and hang out. You'll find out. So I goes and I hang out, you know, right? So I walk in and they was like, yo, you grab this. And when they come in, you like escort them over here. And I'm like, oh, shit, I'm in a crack house. See, you need to understand, you know, I was trying to take care of a young family, so I was going to school, doing a little work-study program, and I was hustling from 5 o'clock to 2 or 3 in the morning, go home, she would feed me, I would go to sleep, and she would wake me up so I can go to school, because, see, we had this plan that I was going to get us out the ghetto. And I graduated high school and all that, y'all. But, see, along the way, man, I turned into this person that I didn't even realize who I was no more. You know, it was like this chameleon, like whatever situation I got to, I could switch myself to. You know, I can adjust to any situation, any kind of way. Long story short, man, I wind up hooking up with these guys, man, and we doing all this stuff and we drinking, and it's just like the whole. One night I'm asleep. And it's clear as day, like a movie, I watched this guy walk up to me in my dream and blow my brains out and watch myself die in this dream. And I woke up, and that's the last time that I sold crack. because I went. See, you need to understand, I grew up in a religious family, see? And for me to get that, see, that was God telling me if I kept living that way, I was going to die. 35 days later, I joined the Navy. And the only reason I wasn't in the Navy the next day is because I used to smoke weed and I needed 30 days for it to clear out my system. That's the only reason. See, I wasn't running. See, they thought I was running from the streets. I was trying to run from the punishment and the wrath of God that I knew that if I kept living the way I was living, I knew I was going to die. Right. And I didn't want to die. I wanted to live so I could take care of my family. So I joined the Navy, went to A school, thought everything was okay. And man, wow, there I go again. I showed up. Hey, this dude, like, I can't freaking shake him. He won't get off my back. You know what I'm saying? He won't get off my back. I can't shake him. Everywhere I go, he there. Every time I turn around, he right there. You know, and let me tell you, man, that drinking tips to oblivion and passing out and blacking out, it kept happening. You see, when I first got here and the Navy told me I had a problem with alcohol, I couldn't understand it. They sent me to treatment. I didn't drink for 3.5 years, but guess what else I didn't do? I didn't do no steps, didn't do no traditions. Asked Bill Miller to be my sponsor. He said, yeah, called him twice. Not a cloud on the horizon. My homeboy come back from overseas. I'm sitting in the back seat with a 40-ounce, right? I crack it, and in my mind, I'm saying, all this stuff you guys in AA talking about, oh, if you don't drink, you won't get drunk. Oh, keep coming back. And I'm like, hit it, and the disease say, you know you done fucked up now. See? Because, see, they was like what they call regular drinkers. They could, like, drink and go home. But, see, I suffer from a disease that's twofold in nature. I suffer from a disease that's an obsession of the mind and an allergy of the body. The mind that tell me that I can't and the consequences of when I put it in are the body that show me that I should not. Okay, you need to understand that. I know who I am and what I am today. But you need to understand, you know, it took me 2 alcoholic comas, drinking myself into alcoholic comas. See, I couldn't understand what the person was like when he got here and I walk up and he's sitting on the thing on curb and he look and he smell like not so good, right? And everybody walking past him turning their nose up and stuff. See, I couldn't relate. I couldn't understand. I couldn't say, you know, I couldn't say I was an alcoholic because if I admitted I was an alcoholic, maybe I got some similarity to him. And I didn't want that stigma. Guess what, though? See, you need to understand the way that I drink, my body and my organs shut down. And see, I became intimately familiar what it's like to wake up in my piss and my shit. Come on. See, I need you to understand that I'm not going to get a disease, no break tonight. I'm going to tell on it. And the reason I'm going to tell on the disease, because I want the newcomer to understand, just because you're making it past tonight don't mean you're going to make it past tomorrow. You see, so what happened is on May the 8th, 2005, man, I drunk myself into another alcoholic coma. And I woke up, I came to in that hospital, but my visits around these rooms, right, I heard this dude say he woke up in the hospital bed in a similar situation to mine with these tubes and IVs and, you know, machines breathing for me because I couldn't breathe on my own. And I told God, I said, God, if you give me one more shot at this recovery thing, you know what I'm saying? If you give me one more shot, I promise I'll do something every day for my recovery. See, because I'm in love with Alcoholics Anonymous today, y'all. Uh-huh. And that was on a Mother's Day. And that Sunday, you know, I woke up and I came to that meeting here on Monday night. I came here May the 9th, 2005 to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous because I didn't want to go drink. And I ain't found it necessary to have a drink since. Yeah. I ain't found it necessary to sneak no drugs. I ain't found it necessary to abuse my prescription medication. I ain't I barely find it I barely find it necessary to act out on my behavior. You see, when I came back, I did what y'all were saying. From like them other times I came around and I accumulated some just not drinking time. You know, because the book tell me to not drink is not enough. See, that's what the book tell me. The book said, hey, just because you put the alcohol down don't mean everything okay. I need to do some work. Now I need to clean up the outside, the inside, so it can project, so I can start to attract the positive on the outside. So I got this dude called a sponsor guy. You know what I'm saying? And he looked at me and he was like, he say, so what are you willing to do? And I told him, I said, I'm willing to do anything. If he'd have told me to go stand in the corner with one, I'd have did it for as long as he told me to do it. I would have did it because, see, I was tired. I wanted to, at that point, I wanted to live more than I wanted to die. I really did. And I knew that people were staying sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I just couldn't believe it would happen to me. But see, this point right now, like, you know, I got tired of shitting blood every time I went to the bathroom and coughing up chunks of my esophagus whenever I coughed. See, I need you to understand. Alcohol was poisoning and killing me slowly. And I still couldn't stop. See, it took a power greater than myself. See, I believed in God, but I didn't know about the power. See, I didn't know about the power of the program. See, I really want you to understand that. Like, it's power in the program. Now, how was I to get to it? Where was this power at? How was I going to get this God? Where is this God? And the book tell me deep down inside of every man, woman, and child lies the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by pop, worship, circumstances, and a whole swath of other things, but it's down there. So how do I clear the way to get to it so it can come alive in me, so the sunlight of the Spirit can start to shine down on me? So I got that sponsor guy. And me and him met every Sunday. And we went and we read the book after the men's meeting we attended together every Sunday. All 12 steps, all 12 traditions. He told me, you seem like you the sneaky, intelligent kind. So we gonna read this book word by word, line by line, page by page, paragraph by paragraph, page by page. And that's what we did. And see, this man, he helped me get comfortable and start learning about being me. See, I didn't want to stay. I didn't come here to stop drinking. I still wanted to drink because that's the only thing I knew. My alcoholic life was my only damn life. I had to have alcohol at all consequences, circumstances, baby being bored, drink. Wife leaving, drink. Wife coming back, drink. Get a promotion in the Navy, drink. Getting almost kicked out the Navy, drink. Good, bad, or indifferent, all I wanted to do was drink. But let me tell you about Alcoholics Anonymous. See, Alcoholics Anonymous, you men and women that come up in these rooms and y'all hold these things called book studies and step studies to educate us uneducated folks on how that literature is supposed to be understood. Y'all helped me to start understanding and break this literature down. And y'all told me that, yeah, you may live that way now, but it don't have to be that way later. And y'all started to help me to understand, like, what that twofold nature disease meant. Like, the obsession can be lifted. It can be, the desire can be taken away. I can't take it away. But see, you know what happened to me? I ain't even know when it happened. God took the desire to drink away from me. See, I was no longer on my knees with the Bible in one hand and a bottle in the other one, crying and begging God to not drink, but can't not drink because I have no relationship with God to establishing and creating and nurturing a relationship with God that's beyond my understanding. See, that act of providence that it took to separate me from the alcohol and to help me learn how to live this life worth living through the guidelines that's laid out in the big book has changed my life. Mm-hmm. I am no longer a hopeless to die alcoholic walking around in a lieutenant uniform faking a funk. You see, you need to understand that. See, I used to show up to meetings in my uniform, and people look at me like, oh, why you come to your meeting in uniform? I say, I drink all around the world in it. Why can't I take it to a damn AA meeting? I'm just going to keep it real. I drank everywhere I went in my uniform. So guess what? Everywhere I went, travel, whatever I went, if I didn't have time to change my clothes and the meeting was going to start, I showed up in my uniform. Because, see, I was no longer a secret. I was exposing me. See, a lot of people didn't know what I was doing. I was exposing myself. I no longer wanted to be a secret. Because if I hid it, I gave the disease something to work on with me. And I no longer wanted the disease to have no more leverage on me. I wanted the dang on doors to roll wide open. And I want y'all to be able to walk in and look around and see whatever the hell you want to see. And I only got that freedom. See, that freedom only come by working the damn steps. Okay? God introduced me to AA, and AA introduced me to my higher power. You know, I need to let you know, that wife, right, that I mistreated and I cheated on, and I just treated her so wrong. See, we wind up having 3 children together, y'all. And this woman loved me. She loved me. And I loved the hell out of her, too. I just didn't know how to damn appreciate or treat her. I was a hell of a provider. She'd tell anybody, oh, he take care of his damn family. But on the other side of the fence, he's a no-good motherfucker. And if I could kill him and get away with it for the hurt and pain he put me through, I would do it. See, you need to understand, me and this woman that are no longer married, we have a wonderful friendship, and we co-parent our adult children and our grandchildren. You see, I promised her mother that when I took her from Detroit when she was 19, that I would always make sure she was okay. And that's my living amends to her. If she needs it and she says, Jimmy, she can have it. See, because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been blessed beyond my imaginable dreams. You know, you know, the disease is cold. I just want to, you know, I ain't have all the time to share what I wanted to share, but I'm going to share this part. So, I was on a ship. I got my 4th DUI. See, I told you I'm the real one. I'm the real one. You really, when I say I'm the real one, I am the real alcoholic, as the book describes it. So the XO comes to me and she says, James, me and the captain heard about the unfortunate incident. They couldn't say it. We heard about the unfortunate incident, and the captain wants you to know that if you need time off or something, then we're here to support you. But I don't know about you and your drinking, but I excelled way beyond expectation because I know that I'm a fuck up. So I have to excel very, very high. I have to make myself a commodity so that I'm not easy to get rid of. Or if you get rid of me, there's gonna be some situations and circumstances. So I made myself a very important part of this command. And the captain, you know, the captain, like, he said that, you know, this fell close to home for him. So either he was, or someone in his family was, a friend of Bill's. You see, that captain that we went to war and we fought the war is the person who's the chief of naval operations now. See, the break that he gave me through him got me out of George Bailey in 10 days instead of 6 months. Come on. It let me get through work furlough without the Navy finding out and putting me out. You see, what I learned is that higher power that I came to love and cherish and value so much was taking care of me all the time. Because, see, he had something he wanted me to do. So he blessed me with retirement. And then he said, you got the gift now. You've done all 12 steps. You've experienced a complete psychic change to bring about recovery. Now it's time for you to go and do likewise with others what your sponsor did for you. And he sent me out there. So now, you know, I get to interact with people on a daily basis, right? And it ain't nothing nice out there, y'all. It is nothing nice out there. The disease of alcoholism is ravishing. It is ravishing our people that think that they are normal drinkers. See, I used to think I was a normal drinker. I thought that all these things that happened to me was just, I turned down the wrong street. Maybe if I'd have went left instead of right, you know, the police. Well, I shouldn't have reached down and grabbed the phone when I dropped it, and I wouldn't have swerved, and he wouldn't have pulled me over for the DUI. Like, you know, all these things I came up with, right? But now, see, I know, like, all these experiences that I've had, these are some of my most valuable assets today. Because, see, the depth and weight of the message that it took to catch my attention is the same depth and weight that I carry when I go out to work with a newcomer, when I work with somebody that's saying, James, I'm just having a bad day. I don't cut no fucking slack. See, the people that came before me, they used to tell me, sit down and shut the hell up. Take the cotton out your mouth, take it out your ears, and shove it in your mouth. If we want to know about the disease, we'll call on you. See, they said that if I kept coming back, I would learn what this whole thing was about. And see, I done kept coming back for a couple days, y'all. And I know under no circumstance do I get the choice. See, because it is a choice. I don't get the luxury, the dubious luxury of walking across the street buying me an alcoholic beverage. I don't get that. See, I used to have this old timer. People used to be like, ooh, that's a pretty bottle. I wonder what that tastes like. He would say poison. Tastes like poison. That's what it tastes like. The same stuff that was killing me almost 18 years ago, it will kill me even faster. See, I suffer from a disease that is a progressive disease. It doesn't mean that I'm going to pick up where I left off. It's going to be like I never stopped. And like Paul said, I don't want that guy. See, I know him. See, this guy right here that you see today, that God has shown me how to love and appreciate, my twin, that guy, I'm telling you, you know, my mom, you know what my mom, I want to share, and I'm going to close it up real quick. My mom told me one day, we was just talking, and I was going to a meeting, and my mom said, you know what? I said, what, Mom? She said, I hope you never drink again. I said, why? She said, because if you do, the disease is going to tear your ass out the frame. She said, and you need to understand, see, my mom knows who I am and what I am. And she said that because I was a soldier for the disease. You need to understand that. When I say, I take, Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a life worth living. Those kids that, like, stopped liking me, they just adore me. They call me about all their personal stuff. That mom that was sending out Red Cross messages to the Navy talking about where my son is at because I ain't called her in 9 months gets a call from me at least 5 or 6 times a week, sometimes 2 times a day if I ain't doing too much. We FaceTime. That dad that I talked about that I really wanted to kill, me and him, that's my buddy. See, what I came to learn is that he was teaching me how to be the best man that I could be based on what he knew. You know, so we have mended those broken relationships. God allowed them to be mended, like them bridges have been bridged. Like I go home and me and my dad, like we mess around with his horses. We go out on a boat. We spend personal time sitting up in the living room watching TV together. You know, it's this, oh gosh, you know, if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd be dead, y'all.
Yeah.
See, because when I got here, I had one foot in the grave and one on the banana peel. Whichever way I moved, I was done. See, I really, you know, I was listening to the speaker, and I'm gonna go ahead and wrap it up. I was listening to the speaker, right? And he was back in the Midwest where they have all these thunderstorms and stuff. So his escort, like the young man that escorted me in, thank you very much, escorting him up and say, hey, you might want to make it quick, because it might be a thunderstorm and knock the power out. So he said he was thinking like, man, if I get up there and the power get knocked out and I only got 5 seconds, what can I say? And he's like pondering and thinking, and like, it's hope in these rooms.
Yeah.
See, there's hope in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You don't have to go and drink even if your mind tell you that you want to. You know, my name is James Brown. And I'm an alcoholic. And the reason I say James Brown is because I'm not a secret anymore. There was a time that I wouldn't tell you my last name because I didn't want you to find out who I was. See, I used to be ashamed of who I was. Now I'm a happy alcoholic. And I'm grateful and I'm thankful because it's God's grace and mercy that I get to be here tonight with y'all. And if I go home and I wake up tomorrow, I say, thank you, God, for another day. See, it was a guy that told another guy that told another guy that told another guy that when you wake up in the morning, thank God for waking you up sober and clean. And when you go to sleep at night, thank God. And that's what I do. And I carry the message of hope because I want everybody to get the opportunity to live free from bondage of self. And by taking this 12 steps and having a sponsor and having a support group, coming to meetings on a regular basis and doing service work, guess what? I've been free from the bondage of self. I don't no longer live the way I used to. I don't act like the village idiot no more as much. Because I'm not exempt from being normal. I'm no longer running around in the delusion, living like I have no purpose. My purpose has been identified to me from my higher power only because I cleaned up the inside so the sunlight of the Spirit could shine through to me so that I could be here with y'all and we could all get another day clean and sober. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, James. All right, let's give another hand to James here. Woo! Let's also thank. Hello. I'm not done yet. Let's also thank the residents of the house and the Women's Auxiliary for a great dinner.
Thank you.
We would like to close in the usual manner. All right, do your thing. Do your thing. Circle up.
They don't want to hear the rest of it. They don't get your chance to finish and close.
Listen enough to her. We do our own thing anyway.
Yes. Yes, ma'am.